SiriusXM Sports presents At the Races with Steve Bick.
Enough!
Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
From Gulfstream Park, Sirius 219, XM 201, Sports Zone 964, working together to and our website, stevebick.com, to bring you At the Races, Twin Spires, weekend preview, and very good morning and happy that Rick Hammerly, 24 hours later, has been able to join us after a Planes, Trains, and Automobiles experience.
Well, thank you, Steve. It's good to be here, and it is about a 24-hour loss. But yeah, anyone that travels frequently knows you're due for a bad one. And I'd been on a good run for a long time, so you try and take those things in stride. But we're here. I'm still kind of amazed where I am 24 hours later, but after a detour through Detroit, not exactly the straight line getting here from California, but went to Rip City, went there for a little bit, and came here and got here last night. And I was telling the girl at last night at the bar, so I was trying to unwind that I worked here, lived here in the 90s, and a lot of ghosts driving from the airport to the hotel, just places that I passed that from years ago, like we're telling you, Tropical Acres and La Tub, and a lot of good times way back when. So it's kind of neat to be back in South Florida here, and the sunshine and everything else. Of course, being from California, usually you go from sunshine to sunshine, but we haven't had too much out there with all the rain happening, and it's good to be here, and still getting used to the new Gulfstream. For me, the way it's set up here, but it's nice, it's clean, it's was just out on the apron, and everyone's smiling, and the first horse that went by was a happy altar horse.
Oh, that's great.
You want to talk about a flashback. and so when I was here, was running with Jolie's Halo, and Halo's image just came flashing back, so
that's great.
Once again, I looked across the backside to the place we used to live on Golden Isles. We lived on the 34th floor, and you could, from the balcony, you could, if you went home early, you could watch the last race from up there. So, a lot of good times here in South Florida, so it's good to be back.
Well, and you would sort of, I won't say you feared coming, but you knew that it would be a little bit of an emotional tie. You mentioned some of the people that were part of the recent, let's call it the recent past, the last 20, 30 years down here, most notably Bobby Umfrey. And I had just gotten here, actually, with the show when Bobby passed.
I mean, Bobby was my mentor, best friend, however you want to call it, and I still, to this day, think he was maybe the greatest racing secretary executive ever. He was just was so far ahead of the times. And so, yes, he worked as my first boss in Golden Gate Fields. And he's sent me to Monmouth after a couple of years. Says, you're going to Monmouth, bud. Went there and, got the Jersey circuit. And then he got the job down here in 92. And he said, you're coming down here in the winters. I said, okay, and came down here in 93, was, I think, my first year here, and boy, what an experience, just coming down here, and this is where it all happened. I can't think of a better meet that there was in the country, was in the Gulfstream winter dates here, from early January to basically St. Patrick's Day, mid-March, 6 days a week, non-stop action. You never knew who was coming on the track that day. What stars, what horse you might see. And Bobby had a way of, on Saturdays, it was the two-year-old the 3-year-olds you would see, maidens, allowances, and on Sundays it was the fillies. And week after week, you knew you were going to see somebody good. And I remember Florida Derby Day. That was, I experienced Haskell Day up in New Jersey and saw that. And Florida Derby Day was kind of the same thing. It was so big that when you got your season pass and everything else, it said good for every day except Florida Derby Day.
Yeah.
That's how big that day was at the end of the meeting. And remember, that used to be run in March. So it was a prep before the Derby. And now, of course, it's moved with the schedule change, and it's moved as, you know, a final prep for the Derby. But I can remember actually just going through, when I was in Santa Anita last week, I had left behind a poster of the riders that were here in the 90s.
Wow.
I think it was 96. And the jockey colony here was incredible. You know, for me, being a, you know, West Coaster and being able to be around some of these guys, because the jockson was right next to the racing office at the time. I mean, there was a door back and forth, so they all come around. So, and we're talking like Jose Santos, Pat Day, Shane Sellers, Rene Douglas was here, Jerry Bailey, David Penna from Gulfstream came down, Mark Guidry, Jorge Velasquez, Julie Crone, Mike Smith, you know, Herbie Castillo, Cinto Vasquez, Eddie Maple. I mean, these guys were here every day riding in and out, and it really indoctrinated me to the East Coast, and got to, that's where I met all the New York guys who came down here. And I couldn't understand, you know, first you understand, why is everybody going to Florida? And you get down here and you go, oh my gosh, this is why, this is where it's at. So, you know, it's all kind of coming back to me here, and, you know, especially driving by Le Tub, one of the finest dining establishments anywhere in the
best burgers, and one of the best burgers in the country.
Yeah, yeah. And that place used to be open till late. And it's right on the Intercoastal, and if you were there having a beer or two at 1 or 2 in the morning, some well-known racetrackers would pop in at that time looking to play a game of pool or something. That, but it would just, you never know who you might see at Le Tub in the middle of the night. So it was a pretty cool spot. But we made it through. And like I said, you know, between Bobby and Danny Dufford, who was another close friend, we made the rounds here and went to a lot of spots. And so it is. It's come back. And as I drive by these places, you know, Bobby's not with us anymore. But he still lives on in a lot of the stories here.
No doubt.
From long ago. You know, the Pulina place I miss the most, which is Manero's, which was the spot to go,
one of the spots to go
after the races, which was right around the corner here. And anyway, it's great to see the sunshine here and, you know, a little Florida Derby action. I haven't seen a Florida Derby since, I think, 1998. So, and that was Lil's Lad, I remember. Got put up. Coronado's Quest. Well, the thing I remember most about that race, Coronado's Quest was in the race. And Shug trained Coronado's Quest. And he was a little bit of a nut job, so to speak. And he had to be saddled on the walk, I remember, you know, on the way out to the track. And he turned to be a real nice horse. Because when he came to New Jersey for the Haskell, I said, okay, we got to set something up for this horse. And we did. And he ended up winning the Haskell, I believe. But saw Bull in the Heather win the Florida Derby for Howie Tesher. Back when, and you know, and there's another, you know, another name that I immediately think of Wolfie's
Rascal
House and the long line there. You know, what are these people waiting for? Until you get in the line and you wait, and you find out why. Half the fun is in the line, right? Just the characters you meet. So, is Wolfie still here? I don't even know.
No. They're all gone.
They're all gone.
Pumpernicks, all the
Schwarzenheimer's over here. There was a deli over here. It was incredible on Hallandale Beach Boulevard. So
the Stone Crab survives.
Yeah, well, I saw Billy's up here. Billy's is rolling.
Billy's is fabulous.
Billy's is great, right. And
should I give everybody the John Parada insider tip for Billy's?
Go for it.
When you can't get a table, you go downstairs to the market. There's a table in the market. In fact, they recently sort of renovated. There's like a plate. There's places to sit in the market where people come in and for takeout, and you can sit down there. I slipped. Who was it? It was I think it was Welsh, Grenig, and Priv. They were very impressed, but it was Parada who is the one who had the skeleton key at Billy Stonecraft.
You know, you got to love that. And speaking of John, one of the main reasons I came here was to see John before he makes his Ireland move, and not just for a couple weeks. They're moving permanently, and so I think that's going to be in a month or so. And this was provided a good reason to come back and see John and Maggie. But you know, I'd seen them in California 3 weeks ago or 3 months ago. And we went to a little deal, and he says, "Well, I'm going out of it." I said, "You know what? Gene and I are going to come over and see you this year." He goes, "Yeah, we'll have a room for you. It'd be great." And I'm thinking, "A room? What's that mean?" And then I goes, "Oh, we're moving." So good for him. So hopefully we'll get to spend some time with him today. But anyway, we got a big, huge card here tomorrow, right? 14 races, 9 stakes, which is so emblematic of Florida Derby Day and Haskell Day here that up in New Jersey, where they have a ton of stakes, which I think that's where the whole mega day started. I know it was the first that I saw of it, and it's continued here with Mike Lake out here and doing a great job. See, like I say, I always say you live by the stake or die by the stake, because when you put them out there, if they don't fill, you still got to go. But these filled up pretty good. We got some real good races ahead, and I know we got Arkansas Derby as well.
Not just Arkansas Derby, because the 3-year-old filly race. In fact, yesterday with Jeff Franklin as part of the Thoroughgraph segment, we used the Fantasy, which I think is really interesting with Wet Paint as the 8-5 favorite. And listen, she's fine. I don't think, again, like I said yesterday, I don't think she has to win. The Hot Springs. Going a mile, and then
interestingly enough, the
Hot Springs mile as well.
The Hot Springs used to be they changed it to the Whitmore.
Yes,
and wanted to keep the name, which I totally agree with that as being a name guy. And you're right. And that it's interesting. You brought up Wet Paint. I think all of her wins are on Wet
Tracks.
Paint.
Yep.
Yes.
Yep.
So that doesn't mean that she's not capable, but I agree that she doesn't necessarily have to win. What did the sheet? I'm so interested because I didn't see the Saturday sheets yet. I was interested. What did Jeff have to say about that Fantasy?
We agree. I mean, we just kind of agreed that there were options, he's actually interested in the stretch out candidate that Mike Maker, the private purchase that Maker takes over from Clinton Stewart, Pate. Who's had a series of nice performances going short, and now at the very least is going to add to the pace. She's looking lucky to me. I thought was very live, I know that some people have been flummoxed by the recent seasons by Morning Line at Oaklawn, and when I got the line 5-2, I was like, ugh, they sniffed her out, and because I was hoping she'd be in the 4-1, 9-2 range.
I have the early. What was the Grand Love on the
8-1? And it's funny. It's funny that we landed on this because with Jeff as well, and he's got interest in Grand Love. I thought Grand Love would be 6-1, and 5-1 in that range, and she's looking lucky would be in the 9-2 kind of spot. Wet Paint 8-5 in there. Royal Spa, the Rudy Brissett. 4-1 as the third choice, and then there's Lucas, who's just been absolutely indomitable down there. 14% for the meet, but in the big spots, he's been firing, and he's got Bourbon Bash with Raylu Gutierrez. We talked to Raylu the other day in the wake of his Fairgrounds title. He's also got Dwayne with Take Charge Brianna, who's got some merit in the filly race. So there's two, obviously, since the Arkansas Derby move from being a 3-week prep to a 5-week prep, it's a little different. It's a little different. We got a second here before we start to look to guests, and I got a couple of news stories that we have to touch on. What's your Arkansas Derby feel?
As far as the move?
As far as a winner.
I did a little work on the plane here, and you know, that track is you never know how it's going to play. But I've always said, when a leading horse gets at the eighth pole, whoever it may be, and however far he's ahead, you start looking back in the pack to see who's coming, because somebody's always coming. And then when that horse you see is coming, then there comes another one. So if there's a little stuff going on up front here, I don't know. I'm looking a little bit at Red Root 1. I like Gaffleon getting on. I like the way he closed a ton last time. So I'm throwing him in the mix. Reincarnate, of course, I don't know. I like him a little bit. I don't need to use him. I think Bill Mott's horse, Rocket Can, is headed in the right direction. And I think right now he could be the horse.
The adding of the blinkers in this spot is certainly notable. And again, you know, there were really only a handful of obvious candidates in terms of the morning line favorites, and Reincarnate off the variety of not, I won't even call it trouble as much as experience. There so many things were going on for him and Johnny in that spot, and I've talked about this extensively because I stood between Tim Yakteen and Jack Wolf as Johnny animatedly told them everything that went on in the Rebel, and Johnny was so excited. He said he's terrific. He's going to be great. He was learning things mid race. The horse came over on him. He kind of shied. Then the next incident when a horse was on him, he went ahead and was more aggressive, and incredible learning experience. I think he's going to get that, you know, off the board tomorrow.
He will be. I did do a little weather check, and of course, you never...
It looks good.
Yeah, right, exactly.
It looks great.
So,
you have to worry,
you know,
about tomorrow.
Throw in all the stuff that happened during the race, plus throw in a sloppy track.
Well, Johnny said early on, he was taking slop, and that kind of... And then he acclimated to it. So, this is a horse with what's coming tomorrow, and then what comes in 5 weeks. This is one of the, you know, for people that are trying to find horses to... You know, challenge Forte. I mean, the assumption is Forte overwhelms this group here tomorrow, and you know, goes to Kentucky as the favorite, barring any, you know, remarkable eye popper next week at Keeneland Aqueduct in Santa Anita.
Yeah, well, I think we have to agree with that, but you know, so everything you said about Reincarnate is true, and we'll see if that works. Like you, he's going to be. Think he's going to be 6-5 in here or something like that? What is the morning line?
Morning line's 8-5.
Oh, he's going to, yeah, he'll be at least.
Oh, excuse me, 5-2.
5-2. I think he'll
8
be.
8-5 on the Philly.
He'll be down there in a 7-5 range.
I think so too. 6-5.
Yeah. He was, oddly enough, he was 4-1 last, or almost 5-1 last time.
Wait, he was a kind of an unknown quantity.
Yeah, you know, you come in with the Bob Baffert name. Usually they pound those kind, and
you know what's interesting about this race, and I'll be anxious to hear what Scully and Schaap and everybody else has to say. We'll talk to Lafitte Benkai III, by the way, who arrived last night in Little Rock. He's part of the anchoring coverage from Hot Springs for Fox Sports and America's Day at the Races. We'll see what LP thinks. Kate, by the way, let me give a quick lineup check. Kate and Bradar and Andy Biancone here in the third hour.
Live.
Mike Welch here in the third hour, live. Scully by phone. Nick Tamaro by phone. Schaap by phone. Dave Grenig will swing by at some point, and who knows who else.
That's great. You know, it's funny you bring up Caden. Caden was one of the first to be a commentator,
yeah,
during the middle of the races, and she did her work here at Gulfstream Park.
Oh, you mean paddock commentator?
Paddock commentator. Yeah. I mean, from New Jersey, we did a little out here, and then it came down here, and Caden's kind of started it, and it's funny. I don't think she's changed a bit from almost 30 years ago to today, meaning she was just as knowledgeable then as she is today, and just everything flowed. And she'd come in and out of the racing office and see what was going on. If she had any tidbits, and go back and we can, you know, talk about that for a little bit, going way back. But that's great to see. Be great to see her here as well. You mentioned the Florida Derby here, and you mentioned Forte. You know, he got the outside draw, which, you know, in essence, he kind of has a freebie in this race. I mean, they're going to obviously do what they got to do. You know, he's probably going to be able to learn a lot being outside, having to do things that he's probably going to have to do in the Derby. And if he doesn't happen to win by a lot, or he doesn't happen to win and has a good trip, they're fine.
If he doesn't win, it will be a major shock, frankly. Because this, the field, there's a couple of nice horses in here. There is nothing that is supposed to beat him, period. And whether he's six wide in the first turn and eight wide all the way around the track, he can be second or third, I guess, and go on to Kentucky but he's supposed to win this in a canter, frankly.
Totally agree.
So we'll dive in. Let me slip in the news, Rick, and I don't know how much of it you were on top of as you traveled. A reminder, of course, that we've got the future wager, and I'm sure that at least Scully will weigh in, and maybe more. Speaking of wagering, in something of a little bit of a surprise at how easily it seems to have gone through the legislature, Kentucky sports wagering is a thing, and going to go to Andy Beshear's desk, and I'm sure we'll talk about it next week while we're at Lexington, and it's quite something, and apparently legislators were responding to their constituents and their desire. I'll make one quick note, because of all the time we spent with him, particularly when it came to the HHR equipment in Kentucky, this is another feather in the cap of Adam Koenig, who did a lot of the heavy lifting here and was the one who crafted the legislation for sports betting in Kentucky. So not only did he have a lasting impact on the quality of racing and everything involved for stakeholders in the Commonwealth with the HHR work, where he was instrumental, but he wasn't there to vote, but he was there in spirit, because he helped, he really helped get this ball down the field line and went to the sidelines. And Damon Thayer and company carried it the rest of the way.
Well, I know that they were very confident this time. It came up a couple years ago, I think that they were waiting for this actual time to get everybody behind it and move, and it worked. But Kentucky right now can do no wrong. They've done a lot of good things with the penny breakage, you know, for the better, which is great.
Adam Koenig.
The KTDF fund is helping fund purses throughout the state. Turfway coming off a huge meet. They're going to end up staying open for training
year round.
So a lot of things going on in Kentucky in a positive way.
And we don't talk about it. Maybe we'll have a window next week. Again, while we're at Keeneland next week, there's also these harness tracks that have popped up as well, that are tied to the gaming machinery, the HHR machinery. So a couple of other little news and notes. You've heard him on the show a couple of times over the years. As talkative as he is, when we don't have him on the air, Sonny Taylor, whenever I've tried to get Sonny on the show to talk about his life and his decades around the game, and particularly working for the New York Racing Association, whenever I try to get him, he clams right up. So maybe now that he's retired, we can get Sonny to talk a little bit more. This will be his final weekend after 58 years. He's 85 years old.
Yeah, Sonny.
85. Get the vapors. That's our man, Sonny Taylor, and congratulations to Sonny for just an amazing, amazing career. The dates literally back to friends with Joe Louis, friends with Cab Calloway, and the entertainers and movie stars. And Sonny Taylor's he's literally a legend, one of a kind. So I'm assume we're going to see him still around the racetrack all summer at Saratoga. So congratulations to Sonny.
He can never leave the racetrack.
Yeah, Sonny. I can't resist my Sonny imitation. The news yesterday, and another storyline we'll get into next week, Andy Beyer will join us, Maury Wolf, and we will follow up on the story that appeared yesterday at the Financial Times, and I imagine everybody has seen it at this point. Obviously, it got immediate attention, and the title of it, "I Used AI to Bet on Horse Racing. Here's What Happened, How Computer-Assisted Betting Took Over the Sport of Kings." And this is a story that, you know, we've talked about for an extended period, and a lot of the people you've heard on the show on a regular basis talking about computer-assisted wagering. The story, actually, Scotty McKeever, heavily involved in a focus. The author spent time with Scotty here at Gulfstream, but Scott DeRudy was interviewed, and Pat Cummings, Chris Larmy and others, and Mark Annenberg, you know, just retiring from DRF and the work that he did bringing Timeform U.S. Forward and establishing it. So the attention that this is getting is a little interesting, just because, I mean, we've discussed it extensively for years. And, I mean, all you had to do was listen to Maury Wolf in the last 15 years. Maury warned the industry in 2000 that they would have to have a cap on how much these betting teams should be allowed into the pools. And Maury said that you would start to have a problem if you got past 20%, and if somewhere in the 15% or so range. So whether it's a hunger for their volume, or whether it's, you know, a little greed, or whether it's rank and file players leaving the game and taking their handle with them, that number now has been estimated to be 30%. On a going basis now, as much as 35 or more. Then on big days, there's suggestion that on the biggest days, it might be 40% or more of the total handle. And it's a complex discussion, because now the revenue's being counted on by racetrack organizations. The racetrack organizations own the betting team platform. It's so intertwined and now interdependent that extracting it seems an impossibility. But Andy Beyer reached out to me yesterday, and I said, you know, should we get Maury as well? So we'll do it next week. We'll probably do it Tuesday from Keeneland, and we'll let Andy and Maury discuss it. You know, Paul Matisse has discussed it with us. Andy Serling,
Pat Cummings, I know, has been
Pat's got the Idea Foundation, but you know, the people that for years and years were trying to address it and wave a flag. Nobody more so than Maury. Paul Matisse, we've discussed it with, on and on. I mean, it's somewhat insidious because it's creating an artificial takeout over and above a takeout that is already onerous or even, you know, even just usury. So this is a topic that has got to be grappled with more. And if you haven't seen the Financial Times piece, certainly if you're on Twitter, you saw it as it was well circulated yesterday. But it's a good read. There's not any new information per se, other than I think a little tick up of the percentages. The topic is discussed too about the late money. We've explained that issue for years.
Stories like this seem to hit home when they're printed in a non-racing spot like the Financial Times. It's not another daily racing forum piece, or even though it could be the same one when it's out here. The names you mentioned to go over it is perfect, because some people think, well, that doesn't really affect me. Yes, it does. And they'll explain why when they take over. You mentioned, 30 to 35% of a pool. And to some of the pools, the pools that they're more involved in, like the trifectas and the superfectas and the super high fives, basically own those pools. And, when you're playing against them and you're lucky to, get a little piece of it, it's not what you should be getting. So those are four names that are really going to dig into it. And I'm sure you'll learn a lot, and the average guy's going to go, oh, that's why I'm not getting back so much. And of course, the continued drop in the odds is just, it's continual. We've been talking about it for years and years and years.
And so there's obviously several things at work on the underpinning. One being the tracking, the tracking and the noticing. They use a trademark from a recent race at Keeneland. And it's a little bit of a decoy, because just because the horse opened at 48-1 and went off at 17-1, if you looked at the doubles pool, the horse was probably 17-1 or in that range the entire time. But there's this developed storyline and exaggeration about the horse got one by one third. The money in the pool with 28 minutes, it doesn't matter. It's kind of a silly way and an over dramatization of what's going on. And then when you fold in the lag between reporting, between as the pool accumulates and the flushing of the pool as it's coming in, and then the graphics package, which we've talked about 100 times, that the graphics package is always a couple of flushes behind. So until all the money is accumulated, gets into the computer bank, and then the TV visual package catches up with a couple of lead changes, then the number gets reported. But just because the horse with a minute left was 25-1, and then when they crossed the wire was 14-1, it may give a certain perception, but that's not the reality.
But Steve, in some cases, perception is reality. It's a visual. It's a visual. When you physically see the horse's 10-1 when he's leaving the gate and he pays, 12-20.
I get it.
We need to fix that.
I get it.
We need to fix that. That's however you want to do it, whether you stop the betting at 2 minutes before post. I mean, I'm throwing out some goofy stuff here. Or improve the visuals, or you got to get rid of that image.
I understand.
Oh my gosh, who came in? Who came in late?
Fractional odds would help, because in some cases, a 9-2, 5-1, there's a spread, 4-1, the horse might have been much closer to the higher number or the lower number than anybody realizes, because they were not, we're reporting in fractions, you know, not in
in whole numbers.
But,
and we've also talked about this thing for years. Like you mentioned, let's take into account the pick three payouts, will pays, and the double will pays, and put up some approximate odds over here of what maybe they should be. Because, like as you said, you know, the horse is paying $10 for a double, and he's, you know, he's 4-1. Obviously, he's going to get played a little more. We'll put up approximate odds 2-1 on that horse when he's four. There's been some talk about that, that would be a guide to someone who will look at this, and when it does change, you know, when he's 8-1 at 2 minutes to post, he's probably going to go off closer to five.
That would be the imputed, there's the imputed odds suggestion. And there are some graphics packages that are, ADWs that are doing that.
I haven't seen
that. Offering that. Whatchamacallit does it, Amwager does it, it's out there. That's out there, and maybe that would help. Maybe on a more widespread basis.
I think so. I mean,
yeah.
I haven't seen it, and maybe if it's out there, and we get some comments on people that have seen that. If it helps in, the head. It's the visual. It's okay. All right, the horse 10-1, and it's too good for me. Look at this. Says it's going to be closer to 6-1. Okay, at least I know when I bet that horse at 10, and when he pays, you know, $14, I was kind of warned that this was going to happen. But there's a lot of bettors out there that, you know, they see 10-1 and, you know, they want to get close to $20 when that thing crosses the wire. So, you know, we can explain all we can. The money comes in at 30-second intervals, whatever it may be. It still doesn't. The bottom line is, when I go to the window, I'm getting less than I thought I got, and that turns people off.
Well, and we've talked about this 100 times. The insane. The clinging to the payout graphics, the payout graphics, the dollar amount has to be the minimum bet. You cannot have a 50-cent wager and put it up on the screen in the $2 payout. This wasn't something I ever thought about until I dated and married Tina. And she explained, you got fledgling players, especially, you know, places like Saratoga in the summer, that bet a horse, bet a exacta, a daily double. They go up to the window thinking they've won $200, and they get 50 because the $200 payout is reported for
a 50-cent wager.
$2 for a 50-cent wager. And I don't understand. It said 200 for the daily double. Well, no, you bet 50 cents. You cannot send people away from the window having cashed a ticket and being disappointed. The stupidity involved in this that has gone on for decades is unbelievable. That you, no matter how many times it's brought up, it doesn't get a response.
I agree. I can't yell louder than you, almost, because I'm sick of it, too.
It's preposterous.
Especially when you're holding a ticket for a pick four or something.
Well, that's what I'm saying.
Right? And it's like, oh, my gosh, it's $8,000.
It's two grand.
And it's still nice. Well, but it's another visual. It's a visual thing. It's a disappointment when you go.
Exactly.
It's an expectation not met.
No one is supposed to walk away from a window disappointed that they catch
that they won.
Yes.
I won, but I didn't win as much as that board over there said it did. And I don't know whoever comes up with it. Can Heisa come up with a rule that says
Heisa. Yeah, Heisa.
I go into that. I didn't want to hit that button.
Yeah,
but,
thank you.
But someone who has the common sense to not do that at a racetrack. I think they want to pay off. They want it to look like look at them, how much money that somebody's going to win. And many times that payout is bigger than the pool at some of these smaller tracks.
It's unbelievable. That one just makes me nuts. Any number of things that I don't, you know.
That is such an easy fix.
Yeah, it is an easy fix, and yet it doesn't. Or report both. Have a 50-cent, have the 50% payout, and have the $2 payout. It's not hard. It's not hard. You've done it with the supers. You've done 10-cent, the 10-cent super, and the $1 super is posted. Do the same thing for the 50-cent increment bets, and this problem goes away. Unbelievable. Scott Shapiro, Good morning.
Good morning. Loving the conversation. Appreciate the honesty. Glad you made it into town. Hammer sounds like a trip that I wouldn't want to be a part of.
Ah, yeah. You know, like I said, luckily it was first of a long time. Where are you coming in from, Scott? Where are you?
Home.
Are you home?
I'm back in Kentucky for the long haul. I mean, I don't know when I'll leave you. I got a vacation coming up in a few days, or a few weeks. But, yeah, it's time for the spring in Kentucky. And I just got back from New Orleans on Monday. And really excited, obviously, for the racing this weekend. But for Keeneland to get rolling. And then, of course, it's Derby time.
Boy, it sure is. And you know what? We were just talking earlier about Kentucky is the spot to be right now for racing. They've just, it seems like everything's rolling their way, and it's great. You know, glad you're a part of it. You guys do a great job down there at New Orleans, too. I got to commend the team there. And it's a track I only gravitate to, it seems like, on the Saturdays or something to watch, but I enjoy the track and the horses there, the people. It's quite a place. I got to get down there again.
Yeah, always good. I'd never been to Fairgrounds until last year when they started sending me down for those for the Derby prep races. And getting to spend 5 days, three times a year over the last couple of years has been great. Really love the track. Actually, I find it to be the most enjoyable and easy to watch race from most places. I mean, most tracks when I'm in the winner's circle watching a race or in that area, I feel like I'm missing some of what happens, but with the new screen and set up, new tote board and the size of the track, you can really follow along well. And those products on those big Saturdays have really become, really important and great days for the winter racing.
Well, you're back home, and there's nothing like home, as they say, right? So,
I wouldn't know.
Yeah, take the warmth. I'll take the warmth in general in the winter. I would stay down there more if I could. But, Steve, you don't know much about home.
Shaq, let's dive in and get a couple of things done. First of all, how about a leaderboard update?
Yeah, obviously, as you would suspect, with some 100-point winners to the 100 points to the winner races and the bigger points to those that followed the winner to the wire. Some shakeups here as we have Andrew at California, who's opened up an 80-point lead, 639 points over Michael from Oklahoma with 559. And then there's just four others with 500 plus: Andrew from Florida, Luke from Wisconsin, and Anthony from Indiana, and Jeff from Ohio. But as evidenced by the shakeup from last week, plenty of time if you're in the mix to make up significant ground over the next couple of weeks where the 100 points to the winner races are prevalent.
Well, this is there's no turning back now. You've got these two tomorrow and the three next week, and right now this is the time is now.
No question about it. Yeah, it's the time as we're looking to see. I heard you guys talking about, Forte likely to take care of business in Florida and head here as the favorite, but we're going to be looking for maybe other horses, maybe some holes to poke at Forte, and looking forward to seeing who steps up over these next couple of weeks.
Well, let's get some thoughts, and where do you want to start?
You want to go Oaklawn or Gulfstream first?
Go Oaklawn. You've spent the whole winter tracking, so let's see what your thinking is in Hot Springs.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, I thought I didn't have any real strong opinions earlier on in the card, so let's just go start with the Hot Springs in race 8, which I thought was a race that, like many of these races we're about to talk about, looks to have plenty of early speed in it. I think I'm willing to give Gun Pilot another shot. That was a real tough race to figure out, his effort in the Rebel. And he was along the inside, saving ground, looked loaded, and then just was empty. You could argue a number of things happened. Maybe he was empty. Maybe he was scared. Not exactly sure. But he ran three good races prior to that, including the win in the second, over the track. And like I said, there's a lot of speed, so he should get a really good trip. Obviously, Carmel Road and Iron Clover, the other logicals in there, I don't have major holes to poke with them. Iron Clover, the blinkers come off, and Brad Cox, you don't see Brad with positive ROIs in many categories because he just gets bet so hard despite winning so many races, but he's 38% 235 ROI over an 86 start sample size with the blinkers off. So I don't know if, you know, I usually take it as a good sign when guys like Brad and Bob Baffert and others take the blinkers off a young horse. Maybe they're figuring things out a little bit. If that horse can relax and finish, he's got a big chance. But if not, he's going to get caught inside and with a lot of speed. So I was 3-2 in the hot springs.
Very good. 3-2 for Shap.
I thought that the ninth was a little bit up for the taking, clearly seeking unity as the numbers on any metric, including Thoroughgraph, to get the job done finally, but has lost his at 2-1 or less in three straight races. So you just have to start wondering, you know, if this is just a horse that doesn't like to win. I thought number 7, War Rascal, was an intriguing option that should be a really big price. The only start was at Delta Downs at 5 furlongs, so it's tough to gauge those sometimes visually, and I don't follow the product there. But, man, I mean, this horse didn't break well and just looked loaded for much of the race and a huge gallop out it. And both sides of the pedigree, while maybe screaming turf, definitely scream two turns. So I'm going to mess around a little bit with number 7, War Rascal, who's 15-1 in the ninth.
War Rascal making a second start for Carl DeVille. And there's a couple of there happen to be a couple of horses at decent prices that are embraceable. Manta Ray, I thought, was okay. Getting back to a good effort, granted for maiden 60, but certainly from a competitive standpoint, right there. And I'll tell you, an oddball horse that kind of is dirtied up is Tahoe Run for Mac Robertson. At 12-1, this given as you suggest, I mean, given Seeking Unity's refusal, you know, might be a perfect horse to talk about, you know, Refusnik. This is it. So maybe just a horse that's going to be a career maiden type, and it's hard to, you know, it's hard to get excited about betting a horse like that at 2-1.
Exactly. So this kicks off the pick 5. I don't know if I have the guts to just outright toss Seeking Unity because his races are so much faster, but I certainly am not going to single or lean too heavily on him. And some good price options to kick off that sequence.
What are we doing in the fantasy, which is really a fun group?
Yeah, it really is. I was surprised She's Looking Lucky is the 5 of the 2 more second choice in here. I know the last couple of races have been fast. Big steps forward since entering the Matt Shira barn, looking for, I believe, his first graded stakes win, or at least something to that effect. Sorry, Matt, if I got that wrong. Two fast races, but the effort at Fairgrounds was a wash-off race in a 7-horse field. And then last out, ran well, losing to Punch Bowl, but anywhere near that price, I think, would be an underlay. There is a lot of speed. I guess talking about Web Paint makes some sense here because she should get another honest pace. And if she can replicate those efforts over an off track to a fast main track, she's going to be tough. But do you want to swallow, you know, what, odds on or even money or something like that, not knowing whether this horse is going to run as well over a fast main track? And she's just not, you know, overly much more fast, I guess that should be the way I say it. Much faster than this field. So I thought Grand Love was a little interesting. I think there's some pace in here, but I would suspect that Tyler Gaffalione will ride to her a little bit more aggressively than Joelle did back on the Honeybee when she finished an even third off the bench. And I thought she relaxed nicely. It kind of gives Steve and Tyler some options. But at a price, I'm going to go with Towhead, who definitely didn't have much of an excuse in the Honeybee that Web Paint won, but it wasn't an off track. And I did really like her effort two back, and I do think she's shown the ability to settle and sit mid-pack, which is kind of the trip I think I want in here, and I think she'll get overlooked here third off the layoff.
Yeah, no doubt you're gonna get your price.
Exactly. I mean, having been beaten by that one, you could ask the question about Lasix because the last start was Lasix. But I think, you know, she's always been a real tough horse to pass, but she was kind of always up and on it. The last couple of races, she's shown a little bit of a new dimension, and I'm going to give her another shot.
All right, Towhead, the 3, 10-1.
Scott, did you check out the Oakland Mile in the 5th race?
I did. I just didn't really have anything creative. Yeah. I mean, it looks to me like with Baffert shipping in Hopper and the blinkers off thing again. He's 38% with blinkers off, just like Cox. For him to ship this horse in off the Santa Anita handicap effort, take the blinkers off. I mean, I read his quote. It looks like this horse is training up a storm since the race and just not waiting in Southern California, suggests to me that Hopper would be tough. And then I think Smile Happy would be the next horse. Another horse that, you know, with all the rain they get there, so many of these horses come in with the off-track form. But nothing wrong at all with that return race for Smile Happy, who hadn't been seen since the Derby last year. And obviously, you know, came into the Derby or the Derby picture early on as one of the favorites, didn't quite live up to billing. But maybe as a four-year-old, he's going to continue to get better and a real good number in terms of comeback races on the thoroughbreds.
Yeah, I just thought this was a kind of a neat race for seven horses when you throw in Silver Prospector and Caddo River, the Oaklawn-loving Caddo River, who's done some damage there in the past and came back and won his last race. But I thought this was a pretty interesting bunch here. Totally agree with your Hopper recommendation here, coming here from Cali, going there from California here. I thought I was flashing back to Oaklawn here. Hopper looks good in there, but all right.
Yeah, just not overly creative. I do respect the horses you mentioned, particularly Silver Prospector, but I'm just thinking Hopper and Smile Happy, particularly Hopper, might just be a cut above.
Back to the late sequence after the fantasy. Did we worried about that allowance race or right to the Arkansas Derby?
No, I thought there was a horse that I could key in some exotics here. I don't know if he's good enough to win, but this is a race with a ton of speed, with Go West to the inside and Favorite Outlaw to the outside and some other speed types mixed in with Breslow, with Dr. Perry, Emerald Forest, Absolute Chaos. I think Ultimate's going to get the right trip. I like the rider change to Christian Torres, a little bit more of a patient and finishing rider, although he can be aggressive when need be. The horse is 2 for 10 over the surface with 2 seconds. And he skimmed the rail last time out on the turn, saving ground, but never, you know, never really got clear run. Seemed to have plenty left in the tank. And I think he's going to be the right price. So, again, not necessarily sure. I mean, I'll bet him to win if he's 10-1 or higher, but more so keying him, trying to get him into the number and maybe get another price in there as well.
Nice. The 5, Ultimate, Christian Torres for Tim Martin.
Yes, sir.
Yes, sir. Yes. Showroom Affinity has 6 wins. A lot of these horses with far less than that, so that never hurts.
But, should be making a big run off a favorable race shape.
And the Arkansas Derby.
Yes, you know, I mean, I get Reincarnate. I think he's easily the likeliest winner, but, you know, hearing you guys talk, and I mean, it sounds like 6-5, 7-5. Is that what you want to take? Clearly troubled trip in the Rebel, but the trouble in many ways before the lane trouble, you know, getting out of the gate slow and being further off than we expected, ended up helping because the race fell apart. So what kind of trip is he going to get, and how short of a price do you want to take? I mean, that Sham was obviously not that excited to take him on, but I think he's going to get overbet a little bit. I thought Harlow Cap ran better than maybe was discussed in the Risen Star. That race, speaking of falling apart, it absolutely did, the Risen Star with Angel of Empire coming from off. But he's going to have to deal with 2 Eagles River, who Chris Hartman's going to give a shot here at 1 1/8. And, you know, has done very little wrong. The pedigree isn't overly sprinty a little bit, but wouldn't be surprised if 2 Eagles River runs huge with the way Hartman's going in Arkansas this year. And then Airtime was a little bit interesting, too. Going to have to take a big step up, but, and the Lasix is a question, but, man, those last couple of efforts are really big. So, and Red Route 1 to me, it sounds like from listening to Steve Asmussen talk, is he knows he's been too far out of it in recent races, and that's not going to get it done in these biggest races. So he's going to try to ride him a little more aggressively, which to me is a little concerning at 3-1, you know, taking a horse out of his element. So tough race to come up with a strong opinion, because I'm not overly against Reincarnate, but I think he's going to get overbet.
All right. I understand the approach.
Yeah. And then the 13th, I thought was another race where the pace was going to be really, really honest. And I like number 7, Costa Terra, who was 12-1 on the line, second off a long layoff. The last time this horse raced was the Sunland Derby. And then last time, Don't Forget just walked on the lead and crushed the field of Allowance Foes, similar type competition. Thought this horse ran decent that day, despite being three wide on the first turn on the backstretch. And might be one of those Steve Asmussen horses that he, you know, wasn't quite at the top of the division or close as a three-year-old, but had some talent, takes some time, and then brings back and gets much better as a four-year-old. So I like Costa Terra at a price in the finale.
Boy, the Schapper is reaching for the prices. He's looking for double dimes everywhere. 10-1, 10-1, 12-1.
We love
10
it.
10-1. Holy cow.
Big days. We don't get these opportunities all the time.
Big,
you know?
that's been the problem with the big days. The big days have been
Shock City.
It's you know, it's funny. It's two extremes. It's either a bunch of odds-on winners, or it's like you look at the results and you say, I must have printed the wrong PPs.
Well, usually there's that one race that you know is going to blow up, and it's the idea of picking the right one.
We'll get to that.
Hit that all button.
That's you. That's
the
ultimate. I addressed that recently about there's a race actually tomorrow at Gulfstream that because I had to put my picks in for Capital OTB. Seth and I 8 o'clock tomorrow morning for the preview show. You didn't know you needed Steve Pick and Seth Merrow. I guarantee you I will be acting like an idiot. I promise you. I'll tell you one thing, though. I got an outfit. I went to Macy's up at Boca Town Center, and unbelievable. Forget about it.
For what?
Oh, I'm on TV tomorrow. I got to look. I got to have a look. I'm in South Florida. I got to.
Just have the intro of you driving up in that Camaro this morning.
I love it. All right. Chap, what about Gulfstream? Give us some picks before Nick Camaro joins us.
Yeah, just a couple. I'll just give the two prep races. I thought the Gulfstream Park Oaks was a little bit interesting. I thought Atomically made some sense. I thought the forward gal, shorter than she wants to go, was in a little bit of a tricky spot on the backstretch. I thought she fought on pretty well to finish third. Now stretches out, has been given rest, and clearly likes this course. And I think Sacred Wish, obviously an interesting wild card, it moved into the Weaver Barn. It looks like Black Type Thoroughbreds, Jake Bayless and them, purchased this one after the race at Oaklawn, or part of this one. And that was a really big effort with the blinkers going on. The two turns is a question, taking on winners, shipping, lots of questions. But I thought Miracle, who is going to take a lot of money, was beatable. I mean, she ran a good race, but now we got to, you know, I don't know what I really think of the three-year-old filly division in Louisiana after South Lawn disposed of the ones that were in the right, Rachel Alexandra. And then Dorth Vader, you got to ask about the regression and the two turns. So I thought Atomically and Sacred Wish would be the ones I would use in a horizontal environment.
Interesting. Okay.
And then, I mean, I just don't have anything too creative in the Florida Derby. Forte is supposed to win this race, like you said, and win it under a canter. I thought Mage would be the most interesting, but he's just drawn between other speeds. Just a really tough spot. I mean, he ran way better than maybe it looks and has been discussed in the Fountain of Youth, but would have really liked to have seen him get a little bit of a more fair shake against the field without tons of speed in it, because I think he's a talented horse that could bring some pace to the Derby, but tough spot. So I thought Fort Bragg with Rosario would sit off the pace and be able to pick up the pieces. So I'm pretty chalky with a 11-10 in the Florida Derby.
I think that's going to be a widespread, and Mage, and yeah, I hear you. Chap, are we going to do live next week? Am I going to see you at Keeneland next Friday?
I won't be there next week. I won't be there next week. So I'll be, I won't be there at least on Saturday. I might go up on Sunday, but yeah, I won't be there. We have our first of our Inside Churchill Downs radio show.
Can't miss that.
Year, so yeah, I need to stick around Louisville. So won't be up Friday. And then Saturday, I've got a couple things going on while the Masters and all the other racing is going on. So.
All right. So we will not have an in-person Schapp appearance, where he will wear his Shapiro's sweatshirt that I got him. we will see Shap Derby
we
week.
We got a couple brewing, right? Yeah, we got a couple on
yeah,
the horizon.
Plenty,
a couple
plenty.
Yeah,
thanks,
yes, sir.
Thanks a lot.
Thanks, guys.
Great to talk to you as always. We'll see you soon in Kentucky.
Have fun down there.
Absolutely.
Scott Shap, 34, everybody, and there will be a live, certainly a live appearance from Marty McGee.
Right here.
Not here. No, Marty's back in Kentucky now.
Everybody, what's
no,
going on?
That is a tradition.
Always lead to Kentucky.
Marty leads up to Kentucky Derby week and then goes back for Keeneland, and Dave Grenig comes down. You're going to have a Dave Grenig visit.
Oh, well, that's fine. That's good.
So
I actually was looking forward to seeing Marty here in South Florida.
You're going to have to wait till Derby.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't have to wait till Derby, though. In fact, I got to check the schedule, see if we're going to, that just occurs to me. I'm in Kentucky next week. There's no reason why we cannot go see the Redlegs. That just popped in my head. I hadn't thought about that until now. Usually we try to figure a Reds game into Derby, you know, the 2 weeks at Derby, but it ends up being tough to get up there. But next week,
you got to see if they're playing at home.
I'm going to check.
Great American Ballpark.
I'm going to check. Meanwhile, in Houston, Nick Tamaro finally joins us. Nick now is not only doing the Twin Spires handicapping for Santa Anita and Gulfstream, and doing the in the money analysis for Aqueduct. He's also now the a turf publicist for Sam Houston Race Park. He's calling their races. Are you a jock agent for a couple of jocks now as well? What else?
That's one of the only untapped horizons. Maybe I ought to try that next.
And a greeter. What about a greeter?
Giving me any opportunities they can to see if I'm good at something.
You seem to have handled everything thrown at you, Nick, very well too.
Exactly. All of a sudden, I'm getting the Sam Houston information is coming under your byline.
There I am. Yep, the new press release writer at Sam Houston Race Park. So you'll never know. Hang around long enough, you'll get an opportunity to do just about anything.
Well, you're doing great. It's good to catch up. By the way, there's an apprentice jock. You can when she's ready to get on board, you can take her book.
She sounds particularly charged up this morning, so it could happen sooner rather than later.
Nick, because we haven't talked in 2 weeks, give us a quick survey. Anything that really stuck with you coming out of the last couple of weekends, Louisiana Derby and Jeff Ruby, etc. The week before, of course, there were no preps, but trying to think if there's anything else that we Tampa Bay Derby. I don't even think we've talked about that. So give us as we sit here with the 9 furlong races. What are your thoughts going into these 2 weekends?
Yeah, I think the performance that probably sticks out the most to me, because he's a horse that I had some interest in already, was Two Phil's Win in the Jeff Ruby. I'm still a little on the fence as to just how far he wants to go, but I mean, you can't be too concerned about that based on the Jeff Ruby stakes. I mean, he finished up very, very well. You know, made that big move at the quarter pole and finished it out, which is something he really hadn't done in his dirt races. And, you know, given Larry Rivelli's performance over the years on synthetics, it could be that this is a horse that, you know, just really flourished on the synthetic surface. However, he's one of the only horses in the crop that's had the audacity to run a fast race. And if he can do that, obviously in a more significant scenario at a racetrack where he has already run very well, but I think he becomes an automatic contender. The other part of it is that, you know, everybody on a yearly basis covets the potential wet track horses. He really feels like a wet track horse, right? He feels like a horse you're going to upgrade significantly if it comes up a little on the wet side. And so that was probably the performance that stuck out to me the most. You know, we did not talk after the Tampa Derby, and Tappa Trice got the job done. I'm very intrigued to see what he does in his next start, because he's good, but he's not nearly as good as everybody wants him to be, and he has that very unattractive, unappealing style for the Kentucky Derby, where he's going to have to go past a lot of horses. So I'm a little concerned about him. I'm very intrigued to see how he performs in the Bluegrass, if that's where they end up going. I think that's the word. And then as far as the Louisiana Derby goes, you know, I mean, hats off to Kings Barnes for getting the job done, but that was just a very hard race to really take anything from in terms of Derby horses. You know, it's unfortunate Instant Coffee is probably going to come up short, because while he should have run better last week, he had no shot to.
No.
Right, a wide trip, rallying into a slow pace, he had no hope at all. And in a crop like this, where, you know, they're all going to probably take turns beating each other outside of the races that Forte might just be too good for them in, he would deserve a shot. So maybe some defections and things can happen that could make it happen. But, nothing that's been overwhelming of yet. I don't know how long we're going to be waiting on that. I don't know if that's really going to be done tomorrow at Gulfstream, because Forte really doesn't possess the style of a horse that's going to win in a flashy way and earn a big buyer speed figure. And this is a crop that's kind of hurting for one.
Let me ask you one name that didn't occur to me on the intro to include. Derma Sotagake. What was your take on that UAE Derby? Because we all better pull out a microscope.
Yeah, I mean, look, if you're not taking those horses seriously, you're making a massive mistake. So it's pretty clear at this point that they're in a totally different scenario than they've ever been. And he is very fast, and the horse that ran second to him looks like he's fast early as well. It's not uncommon for the UAE Derby to come up a faster race than the World Cup because of the lights and the evening time in the desert, but they ran very fast. And so I would be very careful about dismissing him too readily. He looks like the kind of horse that can get, you know, a classic distance without an issue based on the way he ran last week. And, you know, barring a situation like last year where two horses from overseas end up getting into a big battle with each other, I don't really know why you'd be too concerned about him having a lot of speed. That's a good thing. And let's not kid ourselves, Steve. I mean, Epicenter and Zandon were fine horses last year. There were a couple of horses that were very good as well. This is an extremely weak crop. I mean, this is a crop that has had basically no horse take a step forward as a three-year-old, or even a significant enough one if they had been good last year, and we're waiting on Forte to kind of rescue the crop tomorrow. I don't think it's going to happen, so I keep my options open as far as having a horse like Derma Sotagake.
You know what, Nick? 100%. That's a good call, what you said. This is the perfect year for something, a horse from over there. Because, you know, let's face it, under most circumstances, you see that and you just put a line through the horse and no shot. But this year, not only do you have the horse doing well, but you have our horses kind of waiting for someone to step up. I totally agree. I'm looking at the points here, and I don't even know what's safe points here. There's 40. 40 could be safe getting in, but there's three more races plus the Lexington to get up there, and I don't know if you're on the bottom end of the 40s if you're going to make it. That just shows how evenly matched this stuff is.
Well, it shows what happens in a year or two where everybody's basically just taking turns, right? I mean, nobody's won. The horses that ran well in the LeCompte did not run well in the Risen Star. The Risen Star horses did not run well in the Louisiana Derby, and so it's just been, you know, it's been kind of a mess. The only consistency in Arkansas has been Red Route 1. Otherwise, you've got a horse that now won the Rebel and is being trained up to the Derby, and everybody else has just kind of taken turns. So, yeah, it is exactly. I think it's just that kind of year where, you know, something like this is probably a bigger possibility simply because of who's going to be in the gate.
Right.
Well, and the one, I mean, obviously we'll talk about it next weekend, but there is one horse who has come back actually as a three-year-old who very much established his three-year-old credential and is now a multiple graded stake winner. The consistent ignoring of practical move in discussions is really surprising. Everybody's talking about the way Forte is been anointed, and practical move is, I mean, other than the Breeders' Cup, is just as accomplished.
Yeah, it's, that's a good point. I mean, he's not He's obviously run two good races in a row. I think there's some questions as to whether those races are going to hold up to a significant amount of scrutiny when he faces a little bit better, but he probably won't until the first Saturday in May, right?
Well, I mean, he's gonna... next week, you're talking about him and Skinner and Go Rocket Ride re-engaging. You got that Mandarin Hero showing up, another Japanese interloper. I think the top three in Santa Anita coming out of San Felipe, I think they're excellent. And I have every expectation all three of them show up at Kentucky and deserve serious. You're talking about Mandela and Sheriffs with those other two. And obviously Yak Teen has hit every note properly and well with Practical Move. So I don't understand why the only other horse with a triple digit buyer and you know with a nice solid toehold running a pair of threes lately on Thoroughgraph, the Los Al race and the San Felipe. To me, he's a very serious player, and the two and Skinner and Rocket Ride are both going to take step forwards next Saturday.
They should, yeah. I've got a little more work to do on that San Felipe card. It felt like earlier in the day, there may have been an advantage to being inside, and Practical Move has made two big inside moves in his last two wins, and it's actually been on days where, at least at Los Alamos, it was good to be inside on Futurity Day, which is a rarity. But yeah, I think he's a horse that's being a little too casually dismissed. I think there may have been, I don't know, maybe a little bit of thought that a Practical Joke would have a hard time going a mile and a quarter or anything like that. But what he's been asked so far, he's been able to do. So I wouldn't dismiss anybody at this point. I think it's a year where, you know, if you want to make a slight argument for just about anyone, I don't know. You know, Hit Show has not run in 2 months, and suddenly his 91 fig in the Withers that was just kind of a ho-hum situation doesn't really look so bad, huh?
No, you're right.
So we'll see.
Right.
You know, we'll see how he performs in the wood, and you know, obviously he'll have to run a faster race, but you would imagine that he's a horse that should be getting better with a little bit of time and experience as well. So, yeah, it's part of it is that we see these horses on such a limited basis leading up to Kentucky anyway that it becomes a difficult situation to assess where they are in the lead up to it, until, you know, it's finally time where the rubber meets the road. So hopefully we'll get some compelling performances here and there and get a little more insight.
We'll also see how people feel, you know, a week from Saturday, let's say, Saturday night in a week when Blazing Sevens maybe wins the Bluegrass with 104 buyer. Everything will be different. We got a long, long way to go. So let's talk about the weekend. And, I mean, I know you did Gulfstream because you're doing that for Twin Spires, but some thoughts. Where do you want to go, Nick? And we'll also get a little bit of Aqueduct in, too.
Yeah, I know going through there's not a whole lot to say about the Gulfstream Stakes races, especially the Florida Derby. I mean, I think you're in a situation from a betting standpoint where obviously you're using and or singling Forte in any kind of multi-race play. And I mean, intra-race, I would maybe advocate for a little bit of some intra-race exotics using some horses underneath that might be prices. But otherwise, it looks like a less than compelling rendition of the race from a betting perspective. I know he drew the outside post, but that also has to do with the effort on the racing office's part to fill the gate, despite really a big chunk of the field not really belonging in there. But hey, they're in it, and so they're going to try. One of my stronger opinions on the Gulfstream undercard would be, and I don't even know if it's a strong opinion, it's just interest in seeing the race itself. The Orchid is going to bring together a couple of horses that look like they could actually be decent in this division as time goes by. And I say that because Personal Best, who won the La Prévoyante, comes in off that win and has looked good for Shook. But she's running against a horse named Amazing Grace, who's a German mare that's now with Moyler and with Christophe Clement. And she ended her season last year finishing second in a Group 1 against males in Munich, and then winning a great Group 2 in Baden-Baden. And then she ran third in the Group 1 that ends the year that more or less caps the campaign in Germany that was won by Rebel's Romance. So this is a mare now coming over for Christoph, who I think could be really interesting. So I'm just kind of looking forward to the matchup of the two, seeing what we have there with the ship-in versus what we have domestically. There's a couple of decent races a little bit earlier. I thought it was a nice opportunity for simplification, maybe to get back on the beam in the House Hope. I'm sorry, the Ghost Zapper, which goes as race 7. He's facing horses that he really should beat if he's at his best, and First Captain's coming off a layoff, so I don't know how ready he'll be. As far as Aqueduct goes, I mean, the Cross Country Pick 5 has the three stakes from Oaklawn, three of the stakes, including the Arkansas Derby and the Fantasy, and the two races at Aqueduct are actually both pretty solid. The first is an allowance race where Life Changer comes back, and I liked him in a spot he was entered in a couple of weeks ago on Gotham Day. I think he's still a very good fit here, but Silver Seeker I thought was very interesting. One door to the inside for him, of him going back to 7/8, second off a layoff. This is a New York bred that's come up to the Big Apple a couple times with some success, and he was close to a very hot pace going a mile last time. I think he'll be much more suited to sitting off of it going 7 furlongs, and so I was going to probably start with those two for the most part. The Excelsior is a stake race, good field, solid bunch. Law Professor looking to bounce back from a pretty poor effort in the Razorback, all things considered. And I think if you look at where he was positioned at the quarter pole, the connections would have been very happy with it, and he really kind of stopped. But he was beaten by Last Samurai and West Willpower, so something to be said for that. I think the expectation is that Miles D will run better third off a layoff, although he has not come back as a 5-year-old anywhere near what we saw as a 3 into a 4-year-old. But they look like the main players in there. Anybody else would have to require a pretty big step up, and so that leaves the Oaklawn races. I'm sure you've talked about the Oaklawn races
a little bit, but I'm anxious for your take.
Well, I'll tell you, as far as this Hot Springs goes, you know, I know I'm obviously friendly with the connections, but when Marshall told me they were going to run Eye and Clover here, I thought, well, that's probably a pretty good spot. He ran extremely well in the Gotham. I think there was probably, you know, a little bit of a haste to dismiss the effort that he put forth because he wasn't really in the frame at the finish, but that was a very strong pace, and he was the only horse that was anywhere near the top three coming out of it. So I thought he looked very tough in here. I think he'll get a good trip stalking outside of Powerful, and you know, you put Florent Giroux in that outside stalking spot, he's always pretty tough. I guess the concern is that the pace gets hot if Carmel Road is ridden forwardly. Rocking Rocket looks like a horse that wants to be close to the lead as well. So barring a situation where the pace just gets really on the crazy side, I thought Eye and Clover would be tough to beat there. But Gunpilot is a horse that was in position coming to the quarter pole last time. I'm not sure how much he was helped by being stuck inside in the Rebel. I think he'll probably be better with a little bit more of an outside chasing type trip. But I think that he's a little dangerous there. So I would really just use the 2 and 3. The Fantasy is really a really intriguing race. I'm actually interested to see how it gets bet, because it seems like there's this fascination with Wet Paint. And boy, you bet horses like Wet Paint over and over, you're really taking your life in your hands from a wagering perspective a lot, because she comes from deep in the pack. She's never been on a dry track. This is just a horse to me that really doesn't look all that appealing from a wagering perspective, and she's going to be bet down quite a bit. I have a personal connection to She's Looking Lucky, so I'm going to be rooting for her. I think she's very much a dangerous filly and has obviously improved quite a bit in her last couple. I will admit, though, I think Grand Love is very, very interesting in here, potentially just going to the lead and trying to bottom them out. I think that she might be quick enough to do that, and I hope that they take that approach, because it seems like in recent starts they've gotten a little too cute in taking her off the pace, but she's really just a one-way speed horse, in my opinion. So I think her chances improve immensely if they go that route. And then the Arkansas Derby to me was about, I think when push comes to shove, Rocket Ken is probably, he might just be a little bit better than these horses. I think he's run well throughout the winter. He's gotten better. He seems to have drawn favorably. He's got a good running style. I think the mistake that you make in this race from a wagering perspective is you get yourself too caught up in this Reincarnate trouble. And Reincarnate got into trouble in mid-stretch last time out. He finished exactly where he was going to finish. He was not going to win that race. He was not going to run down Confidence Game. And he was not closing stronger than Red Route 1. So if you get caught up in the fact that he got into a little bit of trouble when he had sat back and taken every advantage of the pace, I think you're missing the plot. And so if you're taking him as the favorite, you're making a mistake. I think Rocket Ken is a likelier winner at a better price. And I'll admit, Steve, before I looked at this race, I really had been very dismissive of Angel of Empire. But he's a horse that has just consistently run well. And I think omitting him or overlooking him is a mistake. I will comfortably use him and Rocket Cannon there.
I agree about Angel of Empire. I was a little surprised. And I've tried to make the point, because I've talked about Reincarnate as much as anybody, because I was standing there with when Johnny was describing the race to Tim Yakteen and Jack Wolf. And it's not a question of the trouble, quote unquote. It's the variety of experiences that the horse encountered and more or less learned from as the race was progressing, and how much of a benefit the experience is going to be, coming back obviously a month later in this spot. So I think it's strictly the accumulation of, what he got out of it, including, the spray and dealing with that and having to shying from running through a hole that Johnny asked him and then later on, finishing well. So to me, there's a lot more going on than the idea of simply a trouble line. It was a cumulative experience.
Yeah, I think that's fair, and I think that hoping that he's going to progress is a totally valid thing. It's just you want that on a 5-2 shot, right? You probably want that more on somebody you're getting a little bit of value from. So I've just never warmed up to this horse. I'm really not sure he's that good anyway, and I think that win over Newgate might be relatively overrated because it did get a decent speed figure in a slow crop. But look, I'm not talking anybody off of him. He's just not a horse that I'd be in a big rush to use. And until one of these, with all due respect to the situation, and it's not about individuals, but until one of these ex-Baffert Yakteen horses wins a significant race like this outside of California, then I'm just going to take probably a slightly more critical approach of them. So, for good or for ill.
Nick, I'm glad you brought up the forgotten horse, Angel of Empire. I mean, look at the connections. We're talking Brad Cox here, and look who jumps aboard. The hot riding Flavien Pratt, who seems to be winning everywhere.
That's true.
And he's done nothing but just get better in every race. So, I mean, I don't know, what's his price in the program?
4-1.
4-1. This horse has a chance to drift up a little bit.
9-2, actually.
9-2, yeah. I mean, I was shocked he was the fourth choice in the morning line. I thought he was a horse that the public would embrace pretty clearly. So, but I mean, it does speak to the competitive nature of the field too.
And it's odd. Oddly, this is his fifth different rider in the last five races. I mean, he beat two Phils who come back, and I mean, this is a hard look. I'm glad you brought this up, because I did the same thing as you did. He's a one-off, see you later, and kind of overlooked him. But then you go back up the page and you say, he's not too bad at all. That wasn't just one good race. He's been improving each time. So that price might be super on that horse.
Yeah, I agree. I think he's the overlooked horse for sure. And look, I don't think there's any denying. I think, Brad would probably tell you this is a horse that was on the JV coming into 2023. And he worked his way up with some good performances. And, the only blemish on dirt is behind Victory Formation. And, I mean, there was script that he had isolated on the front end.
And, matched up with Rocket Can, these two are coming in on fast track. They've won well on fast track. Some of these others have done their damage in the slop, and we're really not quite sure maybe how they can handle a fast track at Oaklawn. So a lot of good things to look at between Angel of Empire and Rocket Can.
No doubt about it. I'm looking forward to the matchup, and that Oaklawn card in general looks outstanding.
Well, there's the cross-country pick five, and we should also note there is a cross-country pick five on Sunday this week again. Tampa, Oaklawn, Tampa, Aqueduct, Oaklawn. So two from Tampa, two from Oaklawn. And the Aqueduct race is the Top Flight, the Invitational. And it does feature Kathleen O coming back out of the Royal Delta. Her second start is a four-year-old. She's facing a group of six, and I don't know how much ahead you look, Nick, on the Sunday card, but she figures pretty tough in here. Fletcher's got Falconet coming back out of the Heavenly Prize, But I don't really see who's supposed to beat Kathleen Owen here.
Yeah, I hadn't taken much of a look. I'm surprised that Shug is continuing to press on with her at two turns. I don't know if she might need a cutback down the line, but yeah, it'll be good to see her back in New York for sure. She ran very well in the Cumley last year, and not duplicating that in Florida is not really a big deal.
Well, and she puts blinkers on too, which is interesting. And Shug does that with purpose. He doesn't do that idly.
Yeah, it looks like she's facing a bunch of allowance horses for the most part, too, which, you know, I understand why he would want to do that.
It's a confidence builder. I want to ask you about one last race before we go, and that, because I know you did the rest of Gulfstream, I had tremendous trouble with the 10th race, the Sand Springs, the fillies and mares going a mile and a 16th, and I'm curious what you came up with.
Yeah, that is a tough race, actually. It's pretty contentious. I mean, I guess it depends on how you feel about market segmentation, because, I mean, if you like the race she ran last time, and I do, I think it was solid enough. I think she's the horse to beat. There's no doubt about it. I mean, the connections always drive so much money that direction anyway. I do think she ran well, but what about Perseverancia for Cherie back off a layoff?
Yep.
You know, maybe a horse that she's looking to get a race into with an eye on something down the line, but still, you know, the kind that'll at least be moving forward a little bit. The edge that market segmentation has is that, you know, this late season turf course at Gulfstream, I mean, look, for lack of a better way to put it, it's totally worked over. And you probably want to have a little bit of positional speed. So I think that's a positive for the favorite. But you've also got Motions Joza coming in. I don't know. Ultimately, she probably wants a little bit more ground. So I picked market segmentation. It's not a particularly great opinion of mine. I thought she might just be a little bit better, but I can see Perseverancia being one that I try to help her with.
I don't disagree, and I thought Princess Theorem, you have to look at a little bit. The horse that's going to be a price that's going to be overlooked is Super Hoity Toity for Mrs. Weber and Cassie, and was being prepped on the farm up at Ocala, and, you know, has been away. She could come back here, and if she's tight enough, she's okay, and she's going to be a price.
Yes, and back form Lasix free, too, which is always good with the females.
There you go. Always great to catch up with Nick. Next week, though, the big, maybe the best Saturday. It's not the first Saturday in April this year, the way the crazy calendar falls. It's the second Saturday in April, but the Wood Memorial, the Bluegrass, and the Santa Anita Derby. Nick, thank you, and we'll be listening in and watching email and watching videos at Twin Spires and whatever else you're doing.
Sounds good, my friend. Keep an eye out. You never know.
The king of all media.
Guys, we'll talk to you next week.
Exactly. Nick Tamaro, everybody.
Hey,
and Tam 1215, the voice of Sam Houston Race Park.
That meet's got to be coming to an end pretty soon, doesn't it?
It's getting there. Another.
Then they go to Lone Star.
Yeah. Yes. Yes. That's right.
I kind of think where we are here.
Yeah, the calendar. We're almost at that. We are at that transitional. Turfway has got a few more cards. They've had a fabulous meet, and then next Friday, opening day at Keeneland.
Things start changing.
Yeah. There isn't a whole lot of lily gilding for me to do right here. We're going to take our one break of the morning and come back with Scully. We'll get Scully in here. We'll see about maybe Welsh and Grenig to follow. We talked about 11-ish with Mike. We've got Kate and Bradar and Andy Biancone. They're going to be here in person, so we need another chair. And then Lafitte. We're going to. He's in a production meeting.
At Oakland. He's not here.
No, he's at Oakland.
He's at Oakland.
He's at Oakland. Part of the extensive cut. Big day on Fox tomorrow. And I think NBC is doing an hour here. There's a 6 to 7...
There's a window for
yes.
For the,
there's a 6 to 7.
Florida Derby only. I see the post time is 6:40, so that
it's 6 to 7 the show, and I get and I'm gonna I want to say CNBC and Peacock. Does that sound right?
sounds good to me.
I think CNBC and Peacock. For a little, next week they'll have their big show.
What do I think of that Katy Perry song when you say Peacock?
I don't know. Does she have a Peacock song?
I believe so. California Girls. Now, only because my daughter had it when she was growing up. Peacock.
All right. I'm going to take your word for that.
Somewhere in there.
Right, Scully, Welch, Grenick, Bean Cone, Caton, and LP3. You know, I've seen Patrick almost every day this week. And when I was making my final selections this morning to send to Capital OTB for the show tomorrow,
he never ran a horse he didn't like.
Well, he's got a horse tomorrow in the Oaks. That Infinite Diamond, she's got a big shot in there. She's and 6-1. 6-1. With Joel Rosario. Let Ron Anderson handicap the races for you.
There you go. Why not?
I also did something that I don't do all that often. You might see that on the jockey list, there's a name circled in every race,
right,
except one.
Who is it?
I. Ortiz Jr. Yeah, yeah, I wanted to make sure I looked to see who Irad was riding on all his calls.
Well, I'm going to tell you what. Curious. Looking at this last night, the stake run. Todd, I mean, he's going to win.
He's maybe
four is the over-under.
Three and a half, you're going to make the over-under?
Yeah, I'll make it four and a quarter.
Yeah, he's always Florida Derby Day.
Right?
I mean, absolutely.
The cream seems to rise, and all of a sudden you go, whose horse is this? Oh, it's Todd's. And who's riding? Irad.
There you go.
So, we'll see what happens.
We'll take a break. We'll come right back. We're at Gulfstream. Stay with us.
It's At the Races with Steve Beck on Sirius XM Radio. Here in Pennsylvania, we're proud of our breeding program, the best in North America. But we're also proud to be leaders in this industry. The PA Horse Breeders Association is funding cutting-edge research at Penn Vet into equine health and safety. And we endorse the SAFE Act to help protect the most vulnerable horses. Plus, we're pleased to support the aftercare programs set up by our horsemen's groups. Just a few of the reasons why you should join us in Pennsylvania, the premier place to breed and race.
Who are you betting on? How about an app created specifically for horse racing? Naira Bets. We specialize in thundering hooves, fist pumping, and boosting your bankroll with robust weekly promotions and offer betting tips from actual horse racing experts. Bet all day and night, nationwide. Get the action and thrill of horse racing with Naira Bets. $200 deposit match with promo Steve200. Visit NairaBets.com for details.
Want to know a secret? The Massachusetts Breeding Program pays huge bonuses for finishing first, second, or third at any racetrack in the country. You didn't know that, did you? Massbreds get paid up to an additional 25% of their purse earnings for the owner, and breeder, and stallion owner, and developer. It's the best kept secret in racing, till now. Tell all your friends, and to learn more, visit massbreds.com.